Thank you, Dwayne. And yes, it has been a difficult year. And the first thing I wanted to talk about was, well, before I get to that, is greetings to each and every one of you, all that are live streaming. Thankful to be here. Thankful for the ability to be here, the health to be here, for God's will for me to be here. And I glorify God in that. And I'm thankful for all that he has provided for us as his children through this time. And I've been thinking and praying a lot lately in sincerity. And, you know, I've really have had some difficult times. All of us have had difficult times here in the past few months, quite a few months now, it seems like. And, you know, some of the struggles is, you know, within ourselves, it's our natural reaction to things and how things, I don't know if it's chemically or however it all works with inside of us emotionally, all these things kind of collide together, and we have a difficult times of being to refrain and to temper ourselves and to be able to really be soft-hearted and humble in certain situations. And, you know, our brother was speaking about that this morning, Brother Dwayne, in our hearts and how our hearts can get angry and frustrated. And, you know, some of the things that I'm going to be talking about is directly towards that. But I really wanted to the sermon, Bridging the Gap. And I'm not an expert in the study by any means, but I've been taking time and I've been contemplating and searching and trying to get an understanding of, you know, this day in which we live and kind of draw parallels to individuals from the past and our scriptures and just kind of, you know, put the perspective on everything and what we're doing and how we should be going about doing it and how we should be acting and carrying ourselves through these things. And, you know, as our brother has said, when he opened this up, it's been a very difficult year. And I think about previous years that we've had and I've dealt with in my life. And I know that 9 days ago, this day in 2001, was the September 11th attacks. That was something else. It was just something new to all of us. It was something that was devastating to us. I remember as a younger man, the frustrations and angers that I had that went along with that and my weaknesses that went along with that. And we saw that throughout our nation. It was in the media. It was obvious in certain places. But, you know, that was something difficult that this country had to go through in us as a nation. And we did. And I recently saw a post from a brother and sister on Facebook to a visit to the memorial site where the two towers were standing. And, you know, it kind of made me think, you know, here we are today. And, you know, all the things that transpired from that and are still transpiring from that single event in our history. And there's individuals in here that weren't even born when this happened. So, you know, they truly didn't get to experience this firsthand and see it play out as it was live on TV. It was very, very, had a deep impact on all of us that watched and were a part of that. And, you know, I got a few statistics. I don't even want to call them statistics. It's a few things that were caused by that event and that terrorist attack. And, you know, it's something that resulted in source that I found in 2,977 fatalities, over 25,000 injuries. And there was, you know, substantial long-term health consequences in that. You know, we've seen all the firefighters and the police rushing in and dealing, trying to rescue with people. And they were breathing all that material that was in the air. You've seen it on the news, seen it in the pictures. they were just completely covered in concrete and all the chemicals that go along with putting up structures and buildings and the fires that were burning. All those things had substantial long-term health consequences to people that are still, you know, feeling the effects from that today. Families are still losing loved ones from the actions that they took to try to rescue people from then. And, from a financial perspective, it says here that there was $10 billion in infrastructure and property damage, $10 billion, significant amount of money. And it was the single deadliest terrorist attack in human history and the single deadliest incident for firefighters and law enforcement officers. You know, this is something that truly we don't like to see people go through, but, you know, these types of attacks happen, and they did happen. And, you know, we as a country, we came together and we healed as a people, and we're still healing as a people from this. So in the fire and in the police, there was 343 and 72 killed respectively, 343 firefighters, two police officers. And so, you know, when these things happen in our country, you know, it's something that has a deep impact on us. It really has an impact on our thoughts, our perspective, our hearts. And a lot of times, you know, we, as the children of Christ, we really need to be praying to God about these things that we deal with, and to be able to understand that, you know, it's a day and age that we live in where through whatever the struggles are, that we need to know that the Lord has expectations for us, and we can still, through all these things, be a light for others. And one of the things that I remember when these towers fell is, I believe it was the firefighters that went up and raised a flag. And, you know, it still showed that we as a country will still stand, you know, through all these difficulties, through any situation that we're in, through any trial or tribulation. But, you know, it's something that to this day, it's definitely something that helps me be able to think of my life and to put it in perspective of what God has done in my life and what he expects from me in my life and what life is. And I wanted to start in Proverbs chapter 4 with a few verses there. It's verses 23 through 27. And it says, "Keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life." And so it also says, "Put away from thee a forward mouth and perverse lips, put it far from thee. Let thine eyes look to the right, look right on, and let thy eyelids look straight before thee. Ponder the path of thy feet, and let all thy ways be established. Turn not to the right hand nor to the left, and remove thy foot from evil." And, you know, that could be difficult for us to do in times. That could be a struggle for us to have our heart in the right place, you know, because there's a lot of issues that we deal with day by day that cause, you know, these emotions, these frustrations, these things that we see and play out, how society is and what the media tries to influence us with. It could be difficult. It could be challenging. And in our natural man, you know, we want to be able to just speak our voice and, you know, be able to express ourselves in ways that, you know, it might not be how God calls us to express ourselves. You know, some of the things that with this praying, sincerely, you know, it's been on my heart. We've been up at the ranch. There was a sister that gave, Natasha that gave a testimony about it. And really, just having that humility, that meekness, the lowliness, and to understand that through all these trials that God is there with us and working with us. And sometimes, you know, even in myself, in the life that I live, I forget about that. And I forget about it, and I tend to devise things in my own ways and figure things out for myself and try to make a situation happen that it might not necessarily be God's plan. And I've always found that there is a simplicity towards our lives and what God can do for us in our lives. And most of the time, the difficulties and issues of life are issues that we create within ourselves. And, you know, we can have anger and bitterness, want to seek vengeance and have pride and deceive people and create contention. You know, these things that we fight with within ourselves, it's a spiritual battle. And I really appreciate these verses here to get started off with, because, you know, it's something that we should ponder, you know, what we can do, how we can do it, and to establish our ways. And our ways should be in the Lord. And we know that the Lord is there. We know that if we call upon Him, He will reach out to us. We know that, and we've seen that the Lord's hand in our lives plays a significant role. It helps us. It gives us motivation to do things. It makes us zealous. It gives us a heart of charity. It really gives us an understanding of where other people are coming from, their situations, their health, and the needs that they have with their health. It really, the Lord in His hand and His Spirit works with us in our hearts. And I found it really interesting and a beautiful thing to be in harmony with God and to be able to understand that, you know, through all this chaos, that the Lord can create a calmness, just like the lake that our brother was talking about this morning, just a complete calmness in our life with all of this going on, with anything that's going on. He could give us that clarity. He could give us the ability to put our hearts in a place that will lead us and guide us and direct us in no matter how dark of a place we can be, back to the light, back to the path, and back to Him. And so I'm going to continue on in the book of Helaman in chapter 2. I want to just read two verses there on page 551. It's verses 25 and 26. It says, "Thus we may see that the Lord is merciful unto all who will, in the sincerity of their hearts, call upon His holy name. Yea, thus we see that the gate of heaven is open unto all, even to those who will believe on the name of Jesus Christ, which is the Son of God." You know, and I'm thinking about that. Wow, you know, if I'm praying with all the sincerity of my heart, you know, the gates of heaven are open to receive these things. God is listening. Yea, we see that whatsoever will lay hold upon the word of God, which is quick and powerful, which shall divide asunder all the cunning and the snares and the wiles of the devil, and lead the man of Christ in a straight and narrow course across the everlasting gulf of misery, which is prepared to engulf the wicked and land their souls, yea, their immortal souls, at the right hand of God. And that's the way I look at it and see, you know, there's this bridge that's created here for us, Jesus Christ, to be able to help us through any misery that we have, to help us on the course of life, to help us not only in this temporal world, but also in our spiritual life too, our spiritual walk, to show us the way, to show us the path to God. And it says here, yea, their immortal souls, here, lean back up a bit, and lead the man of Christ in a straight and narrow course across that everlasting gulf of misery, which is prepared to engulf the wicked, and the land their souls, yea, their immortal souls, at the right hand of God in the kingdom of heaven, to sit down with Abraham and Isaac and with Jacob and with all our holy fathers, to go no more out. And I think about that, you know, hey, I want to end up on the right hand of God. Hey, God is creating this bridge for us to be able to get there safely. And I was, you know, thinking about this and starting to do a study on it. I thought this would be a pretty interesting Sunday school lesson, but you know, there's this place that we're going to get to where other people are at, Abraham, Isaac, and with Jacob, and all of our holy fathers to go no more out. These are the followers of Christ that let him lead them. They prayed sincerely to God. These gates were open unto them, and it's open to all of us. It's all of us have that opportunity to be able to see this walk, this path, this safe path to God. And God is laying that out before us. But our prayers need to be sincere. Our hearts need to be sincere. We have to have that humility, that meekness to be able to get to that place. And, you know, that misery which is prepared to engulf the wicked, you know, the gulf of misery. We live in a time where we could get caught up in so many different things that would make us miserable that Satan is just waiting there to devour us. And it's important that we understand that through all these times that we're going through, that God will be there for us. I kind of think about it sometimes when I try to picture these things. And, you know, in this day, you know, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are with God. And, you know, have they seen what we're doing? Have they seen the trials we've gone through? On an individual basis, you know, has Abraham ever looked down, and has God ever shown them these things? And I think about those things, and I think about the trials that they had to go through, you know, Abraham and Jacob. And, you know, it's struggles that in history, Nephi, Mosiah, all these, King Benjamin, you know, all these people that they had to go through these trials in their lives. And, you know, I really appreciate the words King Benjamin, how he's trying to, towards the end of his life, pass on this knowledge, kind of bridge the gap. So those that he is teaching don't fall into this gulf of misery. Here's the path. I'm trying to show it to you. But I wanted to go back. And so I was thinking about this bridge, and, you know, I've never really looked at the scriptures and went into a study, and I started getting into Matthew Henry and his dissertation on Jacob's ladder and his dream. And, you know, because we've been coming and brothers and sisters, members of this church, have been having dreams, and it helped me go back and realize or remember about these scriptures that I haven't read in a long time. So I started reading these. And so Jacob, the son of Rebekah, grandson of Abraham, we go back to Genesis chapter 28. I'm going to read some verses there about the dream he had as he was fleeing from his brother Esau and headed to Syria. And, you know, he was in a pinch, so to speak. He was in flight. And so in chapter 28 of the book of Genesis, I'm going to read verses 10 through 16 and 20 and 22. And it says here, verse 10, "And Jacob went out from Beersheba and went toward Haran, and he lighted upon a certain place and tarried there all night, because the sun was set, and he took of the stones of that place and put them for his pillows and lay down in that place to sleep." I'm going to stop there real quick. And, you know, this is interesting because I've never used a pillow for a stone for a pillow. And so here, and I'm understanding that this probably wasn't the most comfortable inn along the way. He was pretty much pulling up a rock and taking a nap. He was probably weary because he's traveling in a desert land, and he probably was exhausted, and the ground was pretty cold, I bet. As we know, in the desert, there's a huge temperature fluctuation from day to night. We were up at the ranch, and it was almost 90 degrees during the day, and it was 46 at night, so it was pretty chilly at night. And so we know that he was probably exhausted and he was laying down, you know, as the sun was setting, he's like, "I'm done." So then as he's laying down, verse 12, it says, "And he dreamed, And behold, a ladder set up, and at the top of it reached to heaven. And behold, the angels of God ascending and descending on it. And behold, the Lord stood above it and said, I am the God of Abraham, thy father, and the God of Isaac. The land whereon thou liest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed. And thy seed shall be as the dust of the earth, and thou shalt spread abroad to the west, and to the east, and to the north, and to the south. And in thee and in thy seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed. And behold, I am with thee, and will keep thee in all places whither thou goest, and will bring thee again into this land, for I will not leave thee until I have done that which I have spoken thee of. And Jacob awaked out of his sleep, and he said, surely the Lord is in this place, and I knew it not. And so he was probably caught up with all the things going on, what he was going to do, how he was going to get there. You know, the fact that he had to sleep on a rock that night for a pillow, use it for a pillow. And, you know, there's a lot going on. He was probably really struggling within himself. And the Lord showed him this ladder. And I was thinking about that, you know, wow, what an amazing thing. You know, here, Jacob is, and you know, he's pretty much destitute and he's having a hard time and he's struggling. And I wonder if, you know, is this guy feeling the kind of emotions that we feel as we go through these really difficult struggles in our life? Is this happening? And I don't know. Something to be praying about. But what I do know is that the Lord told him that he is there with them and he will keep him in all places wherever he goes. He'll take care of him. He'll provide him everything he needs. And I find it interesting that Jacob said, man, I didn't know this, man. And he showed this to me. And I think about the ladder, the angels coming and going, ascending and descending, and the work that is going on. I don't want to say behind the scenes, but I kind of want to say behind the scenes, because, you know, there's a lot that we don't understand. And we were talking about it in our Sunday school class this morning, the mystery of God. And, you know, there's a lot of things going on, I think, in our spiritual life that are going on that we don't see, that the Lord's tending to. And so I find that interesting that, you know, these angels are ascending and descending. And, you know, this is something that the Lord showed one of his children. And, you know, we've had individuals have dreams and, you know, the interpretations of, man, this is stuff that really excites me and helps me be able to know that the Lord is working with us as his people. And it says in verse 20 through 22, after he woke up, Jacob vowed a vow, saying, if God will be with me and will keep me in this way that I go, and will give me bread to eat and raiment to put on, so that I can come again to my father's house in peace, then shall the Lord be my God. And this stone, which I have set for a pillar, shall be God's house. And of all that thou shalt give me, I will surely give the tenth unto thee. And so I think this is probably one of the earliest places in the gospel that talks about giving to God, tithing to him, understanding that God takes care of us wherever we are. And so it's just a tenth. It's a little give back. And Jacob was an example for that. He had an understanding that God's going to provide him everything. Why is that? Because so we know that God tells us, that Christ told us in the gospel, that he will give us everything that we need. All the struggles that we go through, he'll provide us what we need. And so, you know, it's important that we remember that. And it's important that, you know, we don't know all the things that the Lord is doing in our lives, but we know that we can rest assured that he is taking care of his children. He'll show us, he'll guide us, he'll get us through those places. And I think about that ladder, and I did some of the, I'm pretty sure that it's set that, you know, Christ is that gap, that bridge between us and God. He is that ladder. And whatever we do through Christ is something that the Lord put in place, Christ, God the Father, for us to be able to have that relationship, to be able to spend that eternity with him, and to be able to have that place to go to once we leave this earth. And, you know, our brother, I had this scripture, and our brother reiterated it this morning, and I had it because we had it at the camp, and I just took a couple verses out of it. It was Romans chapter 8, verses 31 and 32. It says, "What shall we then say to these things? If God be for us, who can be against us? He that spared not his own son, but delivered him us for us all, how shall he not with him also freely give us all things?" You know, everything that we need, the Lord's there to provide it. But we have to give our heart and sincerity over to God to be able to receive those things. We were talking about it this morning, and one of the scriptures I read is, you know, if the blind lead the blind, they end up in a ditch. If we don't have our eyes open to those things that God has for us, to see those things, to understand those things, then, you know, where are we going? How are we going to get there? How are we going to know the path in which our feet take, and to be able to establish an understanding of where to go? You know, through all these things that happen, these events in our world, in our time, in the times to come, we need to prepare ourselves. We need to understand that, you know, God gave us the ability and the capacity to be able to learn and to understand these things, to find the deeper meaning. And he tells us that, you know, you draw closer to me and I'll draw closer to you. He'll provide for us those things in which we need. I wanted to go from that to Malachi chapter 3. I wanted to read verses 1 through 10 in there. And this is in regards to the tithing portion of it, and how that the Lord in our lives proves that he's there, and he proves that he is a God and that he does not change. And I think that's the key, is that everything changes around us every single day. It's been changing dramatically, and we're not used to change sometimes. And change, you know, some people like complacency and some people don't. Some people like change, but, you know, it's when the change is of a nature that has a deep impact on who we are, what we believe in. You know, those are the things that we need to be praying about. Those are the things we need guidance from God on as a church, as a body, as a local, as a family, as an individual. In Malachi chapter 3, verses 1 through 10, it starts off. "Behold, I will send my messenger, and he shall prepare the way before me." And, you know, I was thinking about that, and, you know, we know that Christ came and prepared the way, but before Christ came, there was somebody that was telling everybody, hey, you guys need to be ready for the Messiah. And he's speaking of John the Baptist here. And it also speaks of it in Isaiah chapter 40, verse 3, Mark chapter 1, verse 3, and John chapter 1, verse 15 through 23. You'll get a little bit more meat there. And I'm going to start over. "Behold, I will send my messenger, and he shall prepare the way before me, and the Lord whom you seek shall suddenly come to his temple, even the messenger of me, and the Lord whom you seek shall," "suddenly come to his temple, even the messenger of the covenant whom ye delight in. Behold, he shall come, saith the Lord of hosts." You know, he's telling us, hey, he's going to come. The Messiah is going to come, okay? And I'm going to send you a messenger, and he's going to tell you that he's going to come. "But who may abide the day of his coming? And who shall stand when he appeareth? For he is like a refiner's fire and like a fuller's soap. And he shall sit as a refiner and purify of silver. And he shall purify the sons of Levi and purge them as gold and silver. that they may offer unto the Lord an offering in righteousness. I really appreciate that. You know, we can offer an offering of righteousness to the Lord. Then shall the offering of Judah and Jerusalem be pleasant unto the Lord, as in the days of old and in the former years. And I will come near to you to judgment, and I will be a swift witness against the sorcerers and against the adulterers and against the false swearers and against those that oppress the hireling and his wages, the widow and the fatherless, and that taunt that turn aside the stranger from his right. And fear not me, saith the Lord of hosts, for I am the Lord, I change not. Therefore, ye sons of Jacob are not consumed. This is a long extent of time. Even from the days of your fathers, ye are gone away from mine ordinances and have not kept them. Something this country, I believe, is seriously struggling with. And he says here, return unto me, and I will return unto you, saith the Lord of hosts. But ye said, wherein shall we return? Will a man rob God? Yet ye have robbed me. But ye say, wherein have we robbed thee? In tithes and offerings. Ye are cursed with a curse, for ye have robbed me, even this whole nation. Bring ye all the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be meat in mine house. And prove me now herewith, saith the Lord of hosts, if I will not open you the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing, that there shall not be room enough to receive it. And it's just amazing to me that, you know, the first thing we think about is our money. You know, it's coming, it's going, you know, it's fluid, so to speak. And that's why they call it currency. And this is something here that I started praying about, and I started thinking about it. And, you know, there's a lot more to give to God than just our money. You know, there's all these things that we could give and we could provide and we could support and we could be praying for. And the promise is that if you do those things, he's going to open up the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing, that there's not even enough room for you to receive it. Wow, that's something else, you know. Just because of the fact that we pay our tithing doesn't mean he's going to fill up my house full of money. I understand that. But the Lord has shown and gave me understanding of things so much more of more value than what money can buy. And lessons in life, experiences in life, relationships in life, my children, my family, my brothers, my sisters in life. You know, I couldn't receive all of you in my house, maybe my house and my backyard, but, you know, you're all a blessing to me. And the Lord has provided that. And I'm thankful for that. And with our hearts in the right place, no matter what's going on, we can have that understanding that God's going to provide us this love, this care, this compassion, the ability to understand and how to react in these situations. It's difficult at times, and I really think and I know how the Lord works in our lives, and you know, he doesn't by any means beat us with a stick to conform to his gospel. He's a gentle father, and he cares about us, and he loves us. And he shows us that through all the things that he has given us and how he has given us those things. You know, it's neat. And life's tribulations are difficult, and I know that. But God is great, and God is good, and God provides. And that's something that we need to understand and to know. And he'll show us the way. He'll build that bridge. He'll create that means to be able to get where we're going without being caught up in a gulf of misery. And you know, this is something here that I think we need to have a true understanding when he tells us that, you know, he will pour us out a blessing. I think the ultimate blessing that all of us have already been given is his son. It's the ultimate. There's no better blessing to be blessed with than the gift of the Son of God. And for him to be able to be that bridge to get us across that gap to God the Father. And so in Isaiah 53 verses 1 through 6, you know, this is part of that promise. And we know that what Christ has gone through, and it was prophesied of it. It says verse 1 through 6 of Isaiah 53. Who hath believed our report, and to whom is the arm of the Lord revealed? For he shall grow up before him as a tender plant, and as a root out of a dry ground. He hath no form nor comeliness, and when we shall see him, there is no beauty that we should desire of him, or desire him. He is despised and rejected of men, a man of sorrows, and acquainted with grief. And we hid as it were our faces from him. He was despised, and we esteemed him not. Surely he hath borne our griefs and carried our sorrows, yet we did esteem him stricken, smitten of God, and afflicted. But he was wounded for our transgressions. He was bruised for our iniquities. The chastisement of our peace was upon him, and with his stripes we are healed. All we, like sheep, have gone astray. We have turned every one to his own way, and the Lord hath laid on him the iniquity of us all. We don't have any bigger blessing than Jesus Christ in our lives. We know that plan of God, this spiritual walk that we have in this day in which we live, it's something that we need to recognize within ourselves when we're walking, and how we choose the path in which we go, and how we choose to carry ourselves along that path. And so, you know, we've all gone astray, but there's hope. There's hope in that, and it's because of Christ. And I want to read in Luke 15 verses 1 through 7. You know, because one of the things that I understood in this study, I had a lot in this, and I was like, no, I need to cut this down. I'm getting long-winded in my old age. But in Luke chapter 15, verse 1 through 7, I just wanted to express that, you know, God still cares about all his sheep, no matter what. Even if one is lost, he's going to go, and he's going to try to get that sheep back. So in verse 1, it says, then drew near unto him all the publicans and sinners for to hear him. And the Pharisees and the scribes murmured, saying, this man receiveth sinners and eateth with them. Already talking down to him, trying to make him look bad. You know, certain of us probably get frustrated with that and probably fly off the handle and react in a way that Christ doesn't react. But he reacted to them, you know, in the way that we are so familiar with. And I appreciate it. And he spake this parable unto them, saying, you know, he's not going to tell them straight up. He's going to give them a little something to think about. What man of you, having 100 sheep, if he lose one of them, doth he not leave the 99 in the wilderness and go after that which is lost until he find it? And when he hath found it, he layeth it on his shoulders, rejoicing. And when he cometh home, he calleth together his friends and his neighbors, saying unto them, rejoice with me, for I found my sheep which was lost. I say unto you that likewise joy shall be in heaven over one sinner that repenteth more than over 99 persons which need no repentance. You know, and what's interesting about that is, you know, really I can put myself in my human nature, say, well, why would he, you know, I've been good all my life. You know, why would he be so excited and throw a party for this one that was lost? But you know, Christ, God, everybody is equal. Everybody's treated the same. He loves everybody the same. And that's the importance of it, is that, you know, we know that God is taking care of us. But there are so many out there that are struggling that need God in their lives. And if we can help, if we could be a light, if we could be those 99 sheep that they see that God is taking care of and show them with the heart that God calls us to have, then we will rejoice in knowing that, you know, one of the lost ones are brought back. Very interesting. Some events have been unfolded as of lately, and I've had some conversations with individuals that, you know, I haven't expected to have a conversation with in a long time. And I really appreciated the Lord providing that opportunity. And I'm praying for those individuals. And I'm praying that the Lord would continue to touch their hearts. And it was like, it's right there. I see it, Lord. I see it. Let that person soften their heart. Let them come back. Let them do those things that are right. Help them make the right decisions. And they will be found. They'll no longer be lost. That's where our hearts should be. In 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 6 and 7, humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time, casting all your care upon him, for he careth for you. So, you know, as one of the 99 sheep, we don't need to feel like we're not being cared for as we should be. We should know that we are. That's where our faith and our hope come into play here. That's where we know that God is taking care of us. What can we do? How can we tithe our services, our time, our efforts to God to be able to get those that need God in their lives into the fold? Something to think about. Colossians chapter 2, verses 6 through 8. It says, as ye have therefore received Christ Jesus the Lord, so ye walk in him. You know, I think about that, walk in him. Not just mean, you know, think about God when you're walking. No, it's doing those things that we need to do as God's children. You know, like a little child following after their father, wherever they're going, right behind him, their shadow. But in observation, in understanding and learning and developing and being nurtured by him, you know, these are the things that we need to be doing as we have received him in our lives. So here, you know, rooted and built up in him. You know, I was going to bring a little clipping of a plant with roots that grew on it. I'm really excited about it, but I planted them yesterday, so I can't do that. But it was fascinating to see how there are potato plants. And I had a few of them in a glass jar, just clippings to propagate them. And it was really interesting to see these roots just grow. And it's like they wanted life. They wanted to be something. And I was really impressed. And like, it wasn't even a week and a half, and I planted them in the ground. Yeah, it was a week and a half, and I planted them in the ground yesterday, and they're doing well. But, you know, they have roots. Established, they're ready to go, and they're going to thrive. They're going to do what they had that desire to do. I was shocked at how fast these roots started growing out of these clippings, but very interesting to see, you know, something that has the opportunity to establish itself and to be able to grow and to become abundant, because that's kind of vines all over the place and will grow more. It's interesting to see how that plant works, how God designed it, and God designed us, you know, that we need to be rooted and built up in him and established in the faith as ye have been taught, abounding therein with thanksgiving. And says here in verse 8, beware lest any man spoil you through philosophy and vain deceit, after the tradition of men and after the rudiments of the world, and not after Christ. So I read verse 8. And what I see here as I read between the lines is, don't turn on the TV. So, you know, it's interesting of how contradictory, if that's a word, our media, our the things that are going on in this day. I'm not going to go down that. But how that is trying to be such an influence to take you away from God and the simplicity of the gospel and what it can provide us. But that word, abounding therewithin, with thanksgiving, that abounding means to participate and to have in great plenty, being in great plenty, being very prevalent, understanding what's going on, knowing what's going on. And, you know, that's one of the things I wanted to talk about. I preached in New York last week, and I took a little piece of that, and I wanted to share this with you because this is kind of how I went down this whole path here. And, you know, this verse 6 in Colossians chapter 2, verse 6, so walk ye in him. And I was thinking about the disciples, and I pulled this from my sermon last week, just this little portion here. And I've been listening to this book. I share that with you, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey. And he talks about, you know, disciple and discipleship. And, you know, I related it to this verse here and a couple other verses too, but I'm not going to share those. Very interesting. So the word disciple, because I was thinking about the disciples of Christ and, you know, all that they were doing, how they followed him around, how they were being taught by him. Very interesting. And so I looked it up, the word disciple, I looked it up to write this down, but there's some comments in here from Stephen Covey that I really like. It's the attributes of a disciple. And so in Webster's 1828, it says, a learner, a scholar, one who receives or professes to receive instruction from another, a follower, an adherent to the doctrines of another. The constant attendants of Christ were called his disciples. And hence, all Christians are called his disciples as they profess to learn and receive his doctrines and precepts. So the verb transitive for the word disciple, this is still out of Webster's 1828, is to bring up. The second definition, to make disciples of, to convert to doctrines or principles. And so Stephen Covey, he broke this down, and the word discipline derives from the word disciple. Stephen was in for the reunion, so this is just a refresher for Stephen. Discipline derives from the word disciple, disciple to a philosophy, disciple to a set of principles, disciple to a set of values, disciple to a purpose, disciple to a goal, disciple to a person that represents that goal. Pretty interesting. And so some of the attributes of a disciple: subordination to the purpose and independent will. The natural man, right? A clear sense of direction within yourself. Be focused. To be a function of your values rather than the function of the impulse or desire at any given moment. Well, somebody read those verses this morning, right? The natural man. A follower of your own deep values and their source. Those deep values where that source came from, that we are rooted and built up in. And this one I really like. The power to act with integrity. Man, it's not too common that you see people acting with integrity nowadays. I'm not saying any of us. But that word integrity, wholeness, entireness, an unbroken state, the entire unimpaired state of anything, particularly of the mind, moral soundness or purity, incorruptness, uprightness, honesty, purity, genuine, unadulterated, unimpaired state. I really appreciate that little portion of the things that the Lord has brought to me to be able to understand those things. You know, these attributes, these things we need to understand that we learn and develop from Christ, that Christ has given us other people's experiences and trials in history to show us, to help us understand how we react and how we do things in this day in which we live, how we have an understanding that there's something greater, a greater power than what we can comprehend, the mysteries of God and how it works in our lives and how he has shown people those things and established that to where Christ is that bridge, to bridge the gap, to help us through a gulf of misery, if that's where we're at, to help us be able to get back on the path, to help us be able to show those that have gone astray where the path is and help them get back to that. And, you know, it's really neat how it all plays out, how it all comes together. And, you know, this is something that's hard to be. It's hard to be these things all the time. We have, all of us have struggles that we deal with, but as long as we're praying in sincerity to God to help us understand and to know how we carry ourselves and how to do these things and who to call upon, and he'll show us the way. He'll be that bridge. And so I wanted to leave this evening. I read this poem a long time ago, and I wanted to leave in doing so by reading this poem. And it's because, you know, it's interesting. We're going to get through this. We're going to get through many things that I'm sure the future is going to hold before us. And we will, if we have our hearts and with all sincerity are praying to God and letting him be that guide in our lives. And so, you know, we all have responsibility to be able to share our talents, especially give back to God and to his children, to the church, and to his work and to his goal, so we can be a part of that bigger picture that I cannot fully comprehend, and I'm no expert in the gospel. But, you know, those little life lessons that the Lord shows us, we could share those things and to help others, to help the youth, and to be able to build bridges for them so they don't have the difficulties trying to tread across this world in which we live, in this desert place. And so it's The Bridge Builder by William Allen Drumgoole, I think is how you say it. It's I really appreciate this poem. It goes like this. An old man going a lone highway came at the evening cold and gray, to chasm vast and deep and wide, through such was flowing a sullen tide. The old man crossed in the twilight dim. The sullen stream had no fear for him, but he turned when safe on the other side and built a bridge to span the tide. Old man, said a fellow pilgrim near. Old man's what my kids call me. So, you know, says, old man, said a fellow pilgrim near, you are wasting your strength with building here. Your journey will end within the ending day. You're never again will pass this way. You've crossed the chasm deep and wide. Why build this bridge at evening tide? The builder lifted his old gray head. Good friend, in the path I have come, he has said, there followed after me today a youth whose feet must pass this way. This chasm that has been as naught to me, to that fair-haired youth may a pitfall be. He too must cross in the twilight dim. Good friend, I am building this bridge for him. I hope, and it's in my prayers with all sincerity, that we are a blessed people. And I thank God day by day for that. I thank him for what he provides. I thank him for the ultimate blessing of his son and for the abundance which he has given me that my house cannot hold. And I think about that. And I think about, you know, my simplistic type of humor, that I see all my brothers and sisters in there, and being a part of something. But, you know, I think about the funny side of it, and that, you know, all of us probably couldn't fit in my house and, you know, be together, but in the church, and that God has given us this church. And I'm thankful for that. And I'm thankful for the opportunity to speak here this night to you, brothers and sisters. May God bless each and every one of you and the days to come, and that we do those things that would please God and to be fruitful for Him. Thank you.